Welcome back. Nighttime Live continues here on the Mighty 790 KFGO. We mentioned the big show coming up over at the Listening Room coming up tomorrow night. And joining us right now is the other member of that concert. Shane Alexander joins us right now. He has a brand new album out. And I believe, I'm going to check this now, it's called Ladira. And he will be presenting some of his great music. And he also has had a number of songs that have been featured on TVs and films throughout the area, or throughout the country, I should say. And Shane, thank you so much for joining us here on KFGO. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
So tell us a little bit about Shane Alexander. Where are you from? When did it all start for you?
Well, I live in Los Angeles, California. I'm a singer and a songwriter, and I was always in bands and stuff, but I sort of officially went solo with the release of my debut record, which was 2005. And in the years that followed, I've now toured... I guess by the end of my next tour, I'll have done 13 countries.
Wow.
And, I put out five records and an EP, and I've been fortunate to have about 100 songs on film and television over the last 7 years or something, and just, I'm a working man.
I'm just curious, how does that work? Do you approach the TVs? Do the TV companies approach you? How does that work?
Well, I've actually seen it happen all kinds of ways. When I first started with my first record, kind of did well for me overseas, but really didn't do anything in the States. And then my second record, which was called Stargazer, came out in 2006. And at the time, I had a licensing agent named Josh Sanderson here in L.A., and he was kind of starting his business at the same time I was starting mine. And we had a really good run together. And so he was actively shopping my stuff around. And at the same time, a lot of the most juicy placements came through people that were actually at shows. One of my favorite placements was on a show called Bones on Fox. And they were actually at a show, which is great because there's no agent commission if you go right to the source, you know? and so that was one of those really wonderful montage end of episodes where I had 3 minutes, give or take, of television time to myself with no dialogue over it. So it precipitated a really huge jump in sales. And because it's not, there's no talking over it and stuff like that, obviously the performance royalties are really high. And so just that one TV placement paid for that record many times over. And that was a good thing.
That's neat.
So in the years since, like I said, they just kind of come in which way. Sometimes I have agents working. I have a lot of sort of non-exclusive feelers out there in the universe. And so they come as they do. And we also actively pursue things that seem fitting.
I envy you guys sometimes on things like that because I don't think I could ever keep track of all that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot to keep your eyes on. And then, of course, once you've done it, you have to become a collection agency to get what they said that they would give you. And that's always another fun part of our industry. But, you know, you just have as many seeds out there in the universe as possible. And hopefully by the time everything is counted, that you've made a respectable wage.
Now, you mentioned, I think, at the beginning there, you said you started out with bands. You're doing nothing but solo stuff right now, right?
Well, no, I have a band, but I was kind of a rock and roller. I had one band in Los Angeles called Damone, which was like a rock band. We always said we were shooting for something like U2 meets Led Zeppelin. We were a big guitar rock band. And when that band sort of imploded, I put down the Les Paul and picked up the acoustic guitar, and I started to tour solo acoustic. And then kind of with my first record, it was a full band record, but I was just as a solo artist, you know. And so since then, I've had a few, you know, basically I've played with every musician in L.A. that's of note. And then I also have a European band, and I've toured in Holland and Germany using Dutch musicians, and been very fortunate over there as well. And so generally on any given year, I'm doing like 80 to 100 shows and probably 70% are solo. But I have a really, really amazing band in L.A., that I call the Great Favorites. It's Shane Alexander and the Great Favorites when I'm playing with the band. And then I do a lot by myself as well. And then same thing in Europe. I go over there quite a bit. I'm going over in July, and that'll be my 20th tour overseas. And so I have a band there. I'm doing a solo tour in July, but a full band tour of about five countries in the fall.
I mentioned to Aaron, I'll ask you the same question. Are you surprised about the difference in popularity for musicians, no matter who it might be, between the popularity in the United States and how heavy and how hot they can be in Europe?
I mean, yes and no. People always ask what the difference is between here and there. You know, I think to some degree Europeans, particularly the Dutch and Germans, are a little bit smitten with American culture. And so especially particularly being from Southern California, where a lot of the Joneses and the Eagles and the Jackson Browns and stuff like that, if they're into acoustic music, you know, I sort of come from the hallowed ground or whatever. And so they're really into stories and stuff like that. That's one difference I see is, you know, the storytelling over there, they just literally hang on your every word. And but, you know, my thing in the States and my thing in Europe has sort of come up at the same rate. But over there, I did have my first deal with my first record, 2005. And so now I'm on my third deal overseas. But I work both simultaneously. And so, you know, I tour in the United States quite a bit. And then I usually go to Europe up to three times a year.
By the way, you mentioned the Netherlands or Holland. I got a friend in Rotterdam. I understand that's a great country.
It's wonderful. And it particularly Holland is a home away from home for me. With my first record, I just had some good fortune. This was in the era of MySpace, and I was having a lot of traction on MySpace. And so doing my due diligence at that time, anytime I would see press or anything online, I would reach out and say thank you for your kind words and try to figure out booking or distribution or things like that. And there was a website, a Dutch website called realrootscafe.com, which is still in existence. But they had written a really beautiful review of my first record, and I thanked the guy. His name was Jan Janssen, and I just said, do you have any ideas for me coming over? And he put me in touch with a label called Lucky Dice, which was an Americana label. And I really don't see myself as Americana, but regardless, I reached out to them, and as the fates would have it, they were coming to L.A. that weekend. They came to my house, I played some songs for them, and they bought 300 records and took them back to Europe, and that basically started my international touring thing. And so Holland was my jumping-off point, and so I hit the ground running there and had full rooms and got to play some festivals kind of right out of the gate. And so now I've been going back, whatever that is, 8-9 years, and it's just always been my jumping off point. And from there, I've done Belgium and Germany and France and Austria and Scandinavia and England and Canada a bunch. But that was my first proper away mission.
Shane Alexander is our special guest tonight. Ladira is the name of his new album, and he will be at the Listening Room coming up Friday night over in Fargo, downtown Fargo, at 111 Broadway. I'll tell you more about that in just a second. I heard you, by the way, I saw the video on YouTube. You were Skyping some lady for an interview, and here she was, like, just down the road. I mean, I thought that was pretty funny.
It was funny, yeah. She was in Amsterdam, and I was in Hilversum, which is a suburb. You know, by train, it's about 25 minutes or something. But, you know, as much as I travel, 25 minutes is definitely right down the road. But I didn't know where she was until we got on Skype. But, yeah, her name is Tamar, and she's definitely sort of a rock star over there in her own right. And so, yeah, that just happened on my last tour. That was only couple of months ago.
That's pretty cool. Let me ask you too. Now, I've heard that you call your music modern classic. Is that right?
Put it this way. That's what I'm always aspiring to make. When we make records, I've used the same producer for the last four of my records, and you know, so much of the music that influenced me, be it Simon Garfunkel and Cat Stevens and Neil Young, you know, a lot of that stuff is sort of permeated into my DNA, and at the same time, a lot of bands like Fleet Foxes and Band of Horses and First Aid Kit and Ryan Adams are more contemporary bands, but I really see the line that runs through, and that's I kind of see myself sort of along that wavelength.
Ladira, where did that name come from?
Well, I guess it's okay to say. I don't usually say it, but The initial impetus for it was before I went full-time musician, I worked in the music business. I worked for Irving Azoff, who's a huge industry mogul. And at the time, he was living on a street called Ladera in Beverly Hills. And he had about a $15 million mansion there. And I believe they've since moved, otherwise I wouldn't be saying this. But anyway, when I started the song years ago, basically, his house was just so beautiful and palatial, they just always referred to it as Ladera. And so Ladera was, I just thought it was sort of a metaphor for the house on the hill or a success in life, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I started the song basically as a story about him. And then years later, I kind of rediscovered the song and made it more about my life. And now I live on a house, you know, next to a hill. And, but yeah, I just thought Ladera was a really beautiful word. And it means hillside or mountainside, but that's where I got it.
Ladera. Okay, I just about had it right.
Yeah, you were pretty good.
But let
my drummer calls her Ladera. So
let me ask you about the cover of the album, though. That's quite interesting.
Yeah, that was a happy accident. Basically, I have a designer who's directed a few of my videos. He did my website for me. He's an absolute rock star artist and designer named Chris Sesnick. And he's actually an advertising executive, but luckily he's also a fan, and so he's done a lot of amazing work for me. And so anyway, he directed two of my videos, done my site, and a lot of stuff for me, and he had heard the record as I was making it, and so we'd come up together with an abstract cover, you know, sort of like a Dark Side of the Moon is just a sort of an abstract statement cover. And we had a really, really cool cover that was pretty much done, and he was really jazzed about it, and I just totally wasn't landed. I thought, yeah, it's really good, but I wasn't 100% committed to it. And basically, I came across this image online, and I saw this picture, and I was just immediately drawn to it. And so I called my manager, and I sent it to her, and I'm like, I found this picture. I just absolutely adore it. And so we spent about a week doing all kinds of internet searches trying to find its origin, and then I was on tour. And she called me and she said, I found the picture. It's a photographer in Spain. And she said, do you want me to do a letter or whatever? And so I was driving. She sent me the website. And from the website, there was a link to call. And so I just called up. And her name is Gima Gonzalez Lopez. And she's a well-respected photographer in Spain. And it's also a self-portrait.
Really?
Yep. So I called Gima and I said, you know, I'm an American. I live in Southern California. I'm a songwriter and a big fan of your work. I wondered if you'd consider licensing me your amazing picture for my album cover. And she said, I don't understand, please send email. And so I sent her an email and I sent her a link. And so she listened to the record and she said, the record is absolutely beautiful. I would be my honor, you know. And so it just kind of worked out. And of course I had to go break the news to Chris, which was not my favorite day. But I just, the minute I saw it, I was like, God, I have to have it. And I just thought it was a real Christmas miracle that I actually found it, and let alone got permission, and she licensed it to me. And I just thought it looked like a classic album cover. And again, this is the first of my records that I actually pressed up on vinyl. You know, we did 180 gram good vinyl, and I just wanted a real classic album cover that was somewhat ambiguous. You know, I always feel a little uncomfortable with the term singer-songwriter because, you know, I just think it sounds a little bit small. And, you know, the John Lennons and the David Bowies of the world are also singer-songwriters. But basically, you know, they took the studio as sort of a blank canvas. And I try to do the same, even though I do play so much solo acoustic. As a producer and as an artist, I really do like to explore the space. And so, again, I wanted a cover that didn't really tip its cards to what was within, just something interesting and beautiful, you know?
It almost looks like it could be an old Zeppelin cover, you know?
Yeah, you know, that's kind of what I thought. It just reminded me of something from my father's record collection, or Blind Faith or whatever, you know? And so, yeah, it was a real blessing that I got it. And people come out and buy my record. They don't even care about the music. They just want to have the cover.
Well, I don't know. How should we describe it to the folks who can't see it right now? It's basically, you said, a self-portrait, but it's the photographer who's actually nude, but you can't see anything. And she has...
She's basically nude in a field, basically between two rows of trees, and it's very kind of soft, exposed. And she's holding a big, giant elk skull in front of her face.
Yeah, that's it. And it's really, really cool. Really cool. Yeah. Before I let you go, Shane, by the way, I have to ask you, I heard, too, that you were working on a new musical, too, huh?
I am. It's been a crazy development in the last couple of years. A few summers ago, I had the amazing fortune to I toured the United States with Styx and Yes, two classic rock titans, and I did a coast-to-coast tour with them, and I was solo acoustic, and so those were the biggest shows of my career. And so we were playing in New York City, and a friend of my aunt's, came to the show and bought all of my records, and he worked on a soap opera in New York, and his boss, Larry Carpenter, was a director, but also had been to Broadway before, Tony nominated and has many Emmys, very accomplished guy. And supposedly, Larry had always had this idea to write a musical based on someone's existing catalog of music. And so after that tour, I received a call from Larry, and he flew to L.A. to meet me, and so we were having breakfast, and you know, I just kind of said, well, if you've got some story points, I can, you know, try to start working on some songs or whatever. He goes, no, you don't understand. You've already written the songs. I want to write a story to the songs.
And, oh, wow.
And I said, man, that's the most flattering thing I've ever heard. And in the years since, that was 2011 or 12, the fates moved him out. Again, he's a TV director, and so he now lives in L.A., and he directs General Hospital by day. And a few other musicals and plays he's done since he's been out here. But we have a story called The Freedom Machine. And so we're on our whatever, fifth, sixth draft of the story. And then last summer we did a stage reading to kind of get a real feel for how we were doing. And we did the first act, which is 12 songs. The whole thing has about 22 of my songs in it. And so we stood it up in L.A., and we had an amazing casting director, so we had a glorious cast, just amazing. And it was really exciting, and the main thing was it worked. It stood up, and it was really good, so we shot it with a multi-camera crew for four nights straight, and we've been shopping that around, and so we've just recently got another partner, and we're looking for a place to build it from. And wow. So there's a theater in the south going towards San Diego, and there's another in the north going towards San Francisco, and we're just kind of trying to see. So it's one of those things that I tour and I work on my music, and the musical is kind of out there in the universe, and every 3 or 4 months it speaks up for itself, and we have meetings, and it moves it a little further up the field. And I'm really proud of it, and it was very, very gratifying to see the songs have another life.
And I'm sorry, what did you name that again?
It's called The Freedom Machine. Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, Friday night, Shane, before I let you go, what are the folks going to see up there at the listening room?
Well, we're going to give them a beautiful night of music. I'll be doing all kinds of stuff, new and old, requests, whatever they want. But I'm fresh off tour, so I'm pretty lubed up and in pretty good form. So I think we'll just do a long night of music Anything's possible. Aaron and I have not toured together, but I think we'll probably end up doing something together as well.
Very good. And by the way, folks, yeah. That is located again at 111 Broadway, and they're asked for a $15 donation for admission to go see these two fine gentlemen, Aaron English and Shane Alexander, who you've just heard here right now on KFGO. Shane, before I let you go, what's your website address? People can find out more about you.
ShaneAlexanderMusic.com.
ShaneAlexanderMusic.com. Shane, thank you so much for joining us tonight on KFGO. It's been a pleasure, sir.
Thank you so much, Bob.